Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your old stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your old stuff. You better get up. You gotta be tough when you do your stuff.
Hey everybody, welcome to Founders College. My name is Elizabeth Crisp, and if you've never heard that song, the song you're listening to right now is a Kirk Badger song. It's called Do Your Stuff. And you know what? That's what we do here on Congress College. We talk about Congress twice weekly. On the Monday show, which of course is the show you're listening to right now, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we're going to typically outline the week. When Congress is in session, folks, always pick up Congress College on Monday and Friday, and you can learn about what's going on with your men and women in Washington, D.C. You know, I say this all the time. We have a great, great representative government. We have the best in the world, I believe. I'm not going to sit here and say, no, we don't have warts, because we have got problems galore. But we've got the greatest representative government in the world, but it doesn't work unless we know what our representatives are doing. That's one of the reasons I do the show. Another reason I do the show is to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com. And, of course, gradegov.com lets you grade members of Congress. How about your member of Congress? You want to give him or her an A? Maybe you want to give him a C or a D. You figure out who you want to grade, and then you figure out what grade you want to give them, like I said, the A, B, C, D, or F, and then the site will prompt you to go ahead and write a letter explaining why you gave the grade. So I encourage folks to tell friends and family about gradegov.com, excuse me. And then the Friday show of Congress College is where we recap the week, and we talk about what actually got done in Congress. So as I said, Congress College airs Monday and Friday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or you can always find them archived on gradegov.com underneath the radio tab. Let me say hi to Bob in the chat room. Sorry, I've been missing from the radio world, Bob. I've been in Habitat Strawberry Land. I'm chairman of the board of Habitat for Humanity of Marion County, and we put on a huge, amazing strawberry festival here in Marion County, Florida, and it concluded this weekend. It was amazing. It was huge. We raised tons and tons of money for the Christian ministry known as Habitat for Humanity. So I'm back in the saddle, Bob. Thanks for your patience, and thanks for tuning in. All right, I'm going to get started here. We're going to talk about the Senate and then the House of Representatives. Let me just say this about the Senate. There's a lot of seats that are going to be in trouble, I believe. I'm hoping that some of my friends out on the campaign trail, maybe the campaign conservative campaign committee, can pick up on some of these seats that I believe are going to be in trouble in the Senate. Remember, there are 24 Senate Republicans trying to defend their seats so they can come back and be senators again in 2017. 24 of those seats, and there's only 10 Senate Democrats. So it's really lopsided this election cycle. And if the presidential election doesn't have huge coattails, we're going to have some problems. We're going to talk about those seats in just a minute. Let's talk a little bit about the House of Representatives. What are they up to? Well, Speaker Ryan has been putting together a bold agenda. Those are his words, not mine. Something where he believes he can unite conservatives. He said this at the last leadership conference that they had last Friday, I believe it was. Let me play you just a clip or two. This runs a little long. We're only going to listen to about 2 minutes of it. This is, as I said, Speaker Boehner talking on March 3rd about the leadership ideas. Here we go.
Great. Good morning.
Nice school, Scotty. You bet. That's great. yesterday, the Foreign Affairs Committee passed two very important resolutions. One resolution by Jeff Fortenberry states that ISIS is committing genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. And a resolution by Chris Smith, which condemns the gross human rights violations of the Assad regime. These are difficult subjects, but that's exactly why we need to take these steps. In Syria and Iraq, Christians are being executed. Churches and holy sites are being destroyed. Children are being enslaved. The Obama administration is still not ready to say that ISIS and the Assad regime are committing crimes against humanity. We are. We are ready to say this. We need to recognize these atrocities with clear eyes. And we need to continue to pray for the persecuted. Second, the Obama administration is in the final stages of preparing its so-called fiduciary rule. This rule would raise costs and limit options for people seeking advice on their retirement planning. This rule could hurt millions of middle-class savers. We have already passed a bill in the House to delay this rule, and we have passed bills in two committees laying out responsible alternatives. When this rule comes down, we will be ready to do what we can to protect the savings of hardworking Americans. And when we do, I hope that we will be joined by the dozens of Democrats who have expressed concerns about these regulations. Lastly, this afternoon, I will be attending CPAC to talk about ideas for getting people out of poverty and for reclaiming the American idea. This beautiful idea, this notion that the condition of your birth does not determine the outcome of your life. This is one of the planks of our policy agenda that we are working on right now. You can get all the details on this project.
Okay, now he starts doing some shameless plugs, which I guess we all do. But that's the speaker talking about the bold agenda that he wants to sort of lay out for those up for re-election in 2016 and to help the presidential election along with some ideas. I'm sure we're going to be talking about those in the weeks and months to come. But what do you think of the House of Representatives just making statements, passing resolutions on ISIS and the fact that they're cruel and they're persecuting and murdering and beheading Christians? You know, it's a great symbolic move, but folks, that's just all it is, symbolic. It's as if the Congress has been completely neutered by this president and by this presidential administration. His regulators do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to, issuing regulations that somehow, in some way, in some connection, have some connection to something that Congress passed. But then they take that current law, the law that's in place now, and they rejigger a current regulation or a rule into whatever they want it to be, and it's almost like Congress can't do anything about it. They can use the Congressional Review Act. There's a fast-track authority under the Congressional Review Act. They can make these regulations null and void by passing identical resolutions in the House and Senate. They've got quick debate time. You can't filibuster them. They tee up a vote pretty quickly. They're only a majority vote. So the majority of House Republicans could vote saying no to this fiduciary regulation once it's out. The Senate Republicans could vote no, fighting against this regulation, this fiduciary regulation that's about to come out. The both of those resolutions, even without any Democratic support, could make it out of the House, could make it out of the Senate. They could end up on the president's desk, and what does he do? He just vetoes it. And then you can't override the veto. There aren't enough Senate Republicans. There aren't enough House Republicans to override his veto. So the regulation will stand. That's where the Congress has found itself for the last 3 or 4 years, almost completely neutered. How do we get to this place? Well, in part, in my view, because Congress passed way too many laws the last 10, 15 years that have big phrases like such funds as the Secretary of Energy deems necessary. Really, that pretty much says a regulator can write whatever he or she wants to write. When you have big, open-ended, no restrictions, no real details on legislative language that you write like that, no wonder regulators feel like they can run amok. They can say whatever they want. They've become basically members of Congress. our representative government, folks, and I know Congress College listeners know this, but our representative government relies on the guys and gals, the men and women that we send to Washington, D.C. to represent us. It's their voice that's supposed to be echoing our thoughts, our hopes, our dreams, our desires. But yet when they pass legislation that has just such huge, huge, basic, wide open provisions like that, such funds as the secretary deems necessary, such programs as the secretary deems necessary to get whatever done. That means that's code for regulator, figure it out, write it, and I guess we're stuck with it. Oh, this has got to stop, folks. And I know we're going to talk more about this in the coming months. All right, let's talk also about what's going on behind the scenes in the House and the Senate. Well, they are considering the two leadership positions, Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, majority leader from Kentucky, and the Speaker of the House, the Republican from Wisconsin, Paul Ryan. They have been meeting, their staffs have been meeting, trying to figure out what's the best avenue to pass a budget resolution. Why do we care if they pass a budget resolution? Remember, the budget resolution isn't signed into law, so is it really binding? Well, it's about as binding as the budget that you and your spouse or your friend or whoever might do once a year. Do you sit around the kitchen table anymore, and do you figure out kind of a budget you want to stay on, and maybe you tape it to your refrigerator, kind of follow it throughout the year? That's sort of what this budget that Congress does. To me, it's responsible for doing it that way. To me, it's a responsibility. It's a fiscal responsibility thing to lay it out, to put those proverbial green eye shades on and try to figure out how you're going to spend other people's money. But one other thing that the budget resolution does, it puts members of Congress, senators and House members, on record for certain provisions. Because the budget resolution talks about every single penny, every single program, potentially, every single idea, every single regulation that the federal government talks about, thinks about, considers funding, because the budget is supposed to be the blueprint for all of that. So anything goes as far as the debate. Any member of Congress, if he or she can get the floor, can offer an amendment dealing with any subject. So it makes the debates really interesting because you can go and put members of Congress on record on a lot of things. But then what else it does is it allows the House and the Senate, if they deem to, if they decide to put in the budget resolution reconciliation instruction. I bet you Bob from Connecticut knows what that is. It's kind of a fancy way of saying they have the ability to pass a bill later in the year that can reconcile some issues. Oh, let's say Obamacare, get rid of Obamacare, and the reconciliation bill only needs a majority vote. It doesn't need 60. And it has time limits in the Senate, so you can't filibuster it. This is how they voted 6 months ago to try to repeal Obamacare, 5 months ago maybe. And the Senate ended up passing it, almost on a party line vote. The House ended up passing it, went to the president, and he vetoed it. And here we go again. They didn't have votes to override the president's veto. So will they do another reconciliation bill? I believe they will do reconciliation instructions in this budget resolution. And I believe they will have a lame duck session of Congress in October, November, December, and we'll be dealing with some of these hot button issues. Why will they have a lame duck session? Because Senator McConnell's going to want those 24 Senate Republican seats to be out of session, to be campaigning to try to earn the right to come back. So I believe there will be a lame duck session. There'll be more talk about it after the budget resolution, especially if you see reconciliation instructions included in the budget resolution. And I know we'll be talking about it more. I want to flip over now to the House of Representatives. How about Mark Meadows? Remember him? He's a Republican from North Carolina. He is now talking in a big way about visa overstays, trying to make as much noise as he can. He serves on the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. That's that committee that can investigate things in the House of Representatives. Take a listen to Congressman Meadows. This is a little over a minute.
Deneen Borelli here with Conservative Review, and I'm here with Congressman Mark Meadows. Sir, thank you so much for joining us
today.
It's
great to be with you, Deneen. Thank
you. I wanted to get your perspective on the most recent developments in regards to national security in our country. I think there's something that happened just this week.
Well, I appreciate you highlighting that, because one of the things, national security, obviously here at CPAC, has been a big item of conversation. But more importantly, really securing our borders. And so as we look at the visa overstay issue, as you know, the DHS came out with a report not too long ago that indicated that there's some 500,000 people that overstay their visa each and every year. The Oversight and Government Reform Committee, which I sit upon, and Chairman Chaffetz actually leads, we've sent in a letter today, actually, demanding a 2013 report. We've made numerous requests in the past, and so as we look at that, it is really one that should highlight the fact that actually the visa overstay issue is a greater problem than just that.
And he's exactly right. You know, the Department of Homeland Security reported back to Congress 3 years ago that maybe 500,000 overstay their visa. These are people that come in the country legally. They get a visa to come work, and then they just don't ever leave. There's nothing in the immigration system, our current immigration system, that tracks them. There's nothing that counts for them when they leave. So for the agency, Department of Homeland Security, to just sort of say they're accurate statistics on the people that stay here every year, it's a guess. And they're saying 500,000 maybe are here illegally and overstay their visa. You know, Congressman Meadows and many other members of the House and the Senate have been asking for accurate numbers, have been asking the Department of Homeland Security, figure out a way to figure out how to find out where they are. Figure it out. This is a security issue for the American people. Think about it. It only took a few visa overstay people to take down Twin Towers. That's right. That's who took down the Twin Towers in 9/11, were people that were here on a visa and they just overstayed their visa. So figure it out, Department of Homeland Security, please. That's what Mark Meadows is asking. Figure it out, and then we need Congress to address it. All right, we're going to go over to some of these seats that are a little bit in jeopardy in the Senate. And remember, let's remember this. The Senate is only can afford to lose, the Senate Republicans, 4 seats, 4 out of the 24. Otherwise, the Democrats will control the Senate come 2017. Ohio, think about that. Ohio Republicans have lost the state the last 2 presidential cycles. California, we haven't gotten this cycle, this state, in I don't know how long. 6, I think, elections California has gone to the Democrats. How about Nevada? Obama took Nevada from Mitt Romney and John McCain. So it's gone Democrat for a while. How about Florida? Same thing. Last 2 times, Florida went to the Democrats. How about Colorado? Times it's gone to the Democrats, too. How about Virginia? How about Pennsylvania? It's a battleground state. The last 6 election cycles, the Democrats have captured Pennsylvania. Now, these are states where there are Senate Republicans up for re-election trying to hold on to their seat. Let's take, for example, Pennsylvania. That's Pat Toomey. How about Wisconsin? You've got Ron Johnson. Republican Wisconsin has been Republican more often, but 7 elections since 1988 have been very, very tight, and Barack Obama won it by 56%. How about Iowa? This is a crucial state for the presidentials, as you know. Romney picked it up. No, I'm sorry, Barack Obama took Iowa. Mitt Romney, he beat Mitt Romney 52 8% to 46%. This was in 12. So maybe the Conservative Campaign Committee, our friends at the Conservative Campaign Committee, can consider taking up the mantle for some of the nominees, some of the Senate nominees that are up for re-election, especially after the primary season is kind of over. Maybe they can consider taking up some of the causes for some of those elections coming up. It's going to be tough, folks. Think about it. If the Senate Republicans lose four or more seats, then the Democrats will control the Senate in 2017. There are 24 Senate seats up. They can only lose four. So, in other words, they could have an 80-some percent success rate, a high B, if you're all about grading. And remember, I'm Miss Grade Gov, so I'm all about grading. So you could have a successful election cycle in the for Senate Republicans if they got in the 80 percentile success rate and still lose the Senate. So what would that mean? January 3rd of 2017, Chuck Schumer would likely be the Senate Majority Leader. And who's the President of the United States January 3rd? Who's the President January 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, all the way to January 20th? Barack Obama. So Chuck Schumer is the Majority Leader. The Chairman of the Judiciary Committee is a Democrat. President Obama submits a nomination for the Supreme Court. Chuck Schumer jams it through the majority-controlled Judiciary Committee and jams it through the majority-controlled United States Senate, and you've got a Supreme Court justice. Doesn't matter who won the presidential. Doesn't matter if the Republicans end up winning it. We don't have a president until January 20th to represent the Republicans. So think about it, folks. Just think about it. All right, let's go to presidential news a little bit more. How about no Mayor Bloomberg? He's not going to waste his money, folks. He is not going to run. What do you think would happen if Donald Trump got blocked from the nomination at the convention? Do you think supporters will feel so cheated that they'll refuse to vote, even in a close race? Those people refusing to vote, we know what that's about. We know that many, many, many Christians, upwards of 2 million Christians, I've heard, didn't vote for Mitt Romney. They just didn't vote. They sat home. And we have Barack Obama for the next 4 years. Let's not do that again. Folks, Republicans, let's not do that again. All right, let's go to Bernie Sanders. Did he have a big faux pas over the weekend during the debate? Listen to this. This is a little more in a minute.
I was with some young people active in the Black Lives Matter movement. Young lady comes up to me and she says, "You don't understand what police do in certain black communities. You don't understand the degree to which we are terrorized." And I'm not just shooting, I'm not just talking about the horrible shootings that we have seen, which have got to end, and we've got to hold police officers accountable. I'm just talking about everyday activities where police officers are bullying people. So what, to answer your question, I would say, and I think it's similar to what the secretary said, when you're white, you don't know what it's like to be living in a ghetto. You don't know what it's like to be poor. You don't know what it's like to be hassled when you walk down the street or you get dragged out of a car. And I believe that as a nation in the year 2016, we must be firm in making it clear we will end institutional racism and reform a broken criminal justice system.
Wow,
I was with
you
some young people.
You think that gets him in trouble? White people don't know what it's like to be poor? Well, you know, Bret Baier's going to have a town hall-type meeting scheduled for tonight. Let's see if this comes up tonight. I am betting that it does. I am betting big time that it does. All right, I'm going to flip over to the presidential, the death of our former First Lady, Nancy Reagan. I want to end the show talking a little bit about Nancy Reagan, the First Lady of our country for 8 years. First of all, I heard talk about the funeral being something that she put together, and, you know, apparently it's going to be beautiful. Let me just tell folks, that there is an agency, basically. Maybe it's not an agency per se, but there are federal employees that plan presidential funerals, first ladies' funerals, high dignitaries' funerals, well before they die, well before they ever get sick. There are funerals already planned for Barack Obama. There are funerals already planned for Michelle Obama, for George W. Bush, for George H.W., long before anybody got sick, long before any of that. They are basically funerals at the ready at any given time. There are full-time government employees that do nothing but plan, carry out directives from the family members all the time. I remember reading the details of President Ronald Reagan's funeral while he was still president, how it was going to look. And, of course, he died many, many, many years later. All the details of it, who was going to be carrying the casket, all of that. So you can bet that her funeral this weekend or this week will be everything that she wanted it to be. It will represent what she wanted the Reagan family to be represented. But let's talk about Nancy Reagan for just a minute. She did some wonderful things as our First Lady. How about in 1988, Just Say No? Remember that? That was the campaign for people to just say no to drugs. There were more than 12,000 across the nation clubs that formed to just say no. It was to raise awareness about the scourge of drug use. How about when Nancy Reagan defied the State Department when she asked her husband and encouraged her husband, President Ronald Reagan, to enter into a dialogue with Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev? That followed that relationship. Remember, Mr. Gorbachev teared down that wall, part of that relationship, part of that growing relationship that led to the wall coming down. Thank you, Nancy Reagan. How about gun control? Well, people are going to say this is controversial. But I think our country was to the point where it needed some kind of background check, some kind of federal background check for criminal records and the mentally disturbed. That's what the Brady Bill was designed to do. She helped push that through after the assassination attempt on her beloved Ronnie. How about Alzheimer's disease? You know, Nancy was the primary caregiver, Ronald Reagan and his Alzheimer's disease. She started and lent their name to a huge national Alzheimer's association called the Ronald and Nancy Reagan Research Institute. And the one that I think is the most important, she was the best friend, lover, spouse, wife, and confidant of her best friend, Ronald Wilson Reagan. I'm going to leave you with a Michael Bublé song, Home, because right now Nancy and her Ronnie are together, home again in heaven. Enjoy the music. Have a blessed week. Thank you, Reagan, for your service to the nation. Enjoy.
Another summer day has come and gone away from Paris and Rome, but I want to go home. Maybe surrounded by a million people, I still feel all alone. Just want to go home. Oh, I miss you, you know. And I've been keeping all the letters that I wrote to you, each one a line or two. I'm fine, baby, how are you? Well, I would say them, but I know that it's just not enough. My words were cold and flat, and you deserve more.